WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
The documentary film Lost in La Mancha is the story of director Terry Gilliam's disastrous attempt to adapt Cervantes' Don Quixote to the screen. It's just out on DVD. Gilliam says he knew before he started that the project had a cursed history. Orson Welles had also tried to make a film version of the novel, only to have a starring actor die before the movie could be completed. But the odds didn't daunt him. As a director, Gilliam has always pushed the limits. He started out as an animator for Monty Python's Flying Circus and co-directed Monty Python and the Holy Grail. He went on to direct Brazil, Time Bandits, 12 Monkeys, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, The Fisher King, and The Adventures of Baron Munchausen. Brazil and Baron Munchausen earned Gilliam the reputation in Hollywood of a visionary and battler of windmills, so it seemed a perfect match that Gilliam would take on Don Quixote, until it all went wrong. How wrong? That's the subject of the documentary Lost in La Mancha. I spoke with Gilliam last January when the film was in theaters. So you worked on this film, Quixote, for 10 years, and you went through two producers. You tried to start the film twice, and this is all before the attempt portrayed in the Lost in La Mancha documentary. But finally, you pulled together a production team from all over Europe. You had no Hollywood backing, and you all assembled in Madrid for pre-production. How did things go at that point? For instance, one problem you had, your stars, Johnny Depp, who played Sancho Panza, and the French actor Jean Rochefort, who plays Don Quixote, they don't show up for pre-production costume fittings or rehearsal. In fact, I think at one point in the film, it seems as if you can't get Johnny Depp on the phone at all.
Correct.
That must have been disconcerting. How worried were you?
No, I wasn't. I'm not worried about Johnny, and I wasn't worried about Jean either, to be honest. I mean, because the one thing, having worked with Johnny, I know this is a guy who can turn up 5 minutes before you start shooting, and it'll be amazing. That doesn't worry me. It gets frustrating because there's always things you want to talk about, and you start tearing your hair out because you can't. And Johnny was busy doing the film From Hell, and he was in Prague, so he was under the gun because they were running late. And I was worried that he wasn't going to get there in time. And in fact, he was so exhausted, he did take a week off before he finally got down there. But the fact is, he was ready. But with Jean, because he'd achieved a hernia in about a month before he started shooting. And what the result of that was, that it was starting to press on his prostate, and the prostate became infected. And what was shocking is when he did turn up, because he did not get on a plane and then he got down there, was that I suddenly was dealing with a man that was about 20 years older than I'd last seen him a month earlier. It was quite extraordinary. He's 70 years old. He raises show jumping horses. A man has never lost a day of shooting in his life. He's far more fit than I would ever hope to be. And this nasty little organ became infected, and he literally went from what seemed like a 50-year-old man to a 90-year-old man almost overnight.
He did show up for filming. You began filming the movie, and the first day of shooting, the trouble seemed to begin. What went wrong right from the start?
Well, there was a little problem about the extras not being rehearsed in a particular fight sequence. That was the moment I went berserk, because, again, what happened? It's a problem in films, because especially on something like this, I was working with some people I hadn't worked with before, so you're relying on other people's knowledge of them. And there are always some people on the film that spend most of their time trying to impress the director by being incredibly charming rather than going out and doing the hard graft work. And I stumbled on one of those people, unfortunately. And something hadn't been done. Rehearsal hadn't taken place. We're out in the middle of this hot desert area with always limited amount of time, and nobody's prepared themselves properly for that moment. And that was a huge shock. I mean, I did go crazy because it was something I didn't expect.
I think the words you use are, you need to tell me if I'm going to be expletive deleted beforehand. I need to know if I'm...
If I am, I want to know in advance.
That's right.
All I ask. And that's, I mean, it's very funny because I think the four-letter F word I use more than, you know, 1,000 times in the documentary. I think I was quite amazed at how limited my dialogue had become.
The second day of filming was the real disaster. In the documentary, it looks as if a hurricane blew in while you were shooting on location in the Spanish desert. It really looks like a storm of biblical proportions.
No, it was.
What was it like on the set?
I was exhilarated, frankly. Because suddenly, a lot of my concerns about our production problems and potential future problems had all been taken away from me by this hand of this rather violent God. It was quite extraordinary the way it built, because it was a slow build, and we thought, oh, there's some clouds coming, oh, there's a little problem. And when it hit, it was literally like the beginning of Wizard of Oz. And in fact, I'm running around trying to decide whether I'm in the Wizard of Oz or if I'm playing King Lear in The Tempest, in the storm. It was quite extraordinary, because we were under this marquee and all the equipment was there, all the people were there, and I just walked out into the storm. I was so crazed at that point, howling, and I found a large overhanging rock which I crouched under as this storm started building, and it got bigger and more spectacular. It was absolutely beautiful in its anger, I think. And little by little, I started watching water pouring down these mountainsides, which were dry, and suddenly there became waterfalls, and then there was a rush of water, and then hailstones started crashing down, and eventually, after about 45 minutes, it ended. And I had been under this rock looking away from the set, and I crawl out from under my rock and look back, and there's nothing there. A sea of mud is all that's left.
You did regroup and began filming again. And I suppose this is when the most ironic misfortune happened, something that truly elevates this La Mancha story to a fiasco. And that's that your star, Jean Rochefort, fell ill, and he couldn't ride a horse. Now, we have a clip from the movie. It's from the day of shooting that you realize Rochefort is too ill to ride. Let's listen. And here you've just filmed a take and notice something is wrong, and you're on the set talking to your first director, Phil.
Cut! Did you see him sit on the horse?
Crazy.
The pain when he sat down.
Yep. He can't do it. It's just, it ain't going to happen.
I was watching his face very carefully when he got on that horse. And it was just...
He can't ride like that. He certainly can't act like that. And he certainly can't jiggle hand props with that, I want to go to the French and say I'm going to refuse to shoot with Jean Rochefort on a horse until he's medically fit.
That's a scene from the documentary Lost in La Mancha about my guest Terry Gilliam's failed attempt to adapt Don Quixote to the screen. So here you have a Don Quixote who can't ride a horse. Did you know at that point just how physically impaired Rochefort was?
I think we did, because the irony was that when I had been hunting for a Don Quixote, who had to look a certain way and be a certain height, and a certain age, always the problem was that you could find an actor who looked right but couldn't ride a horse. It was the one thing that Jean was absolutely expert at. He was a brilliant horseman. So on that day when he was on that horse and you realized, looked in his face, and you saw the pain he was in, we knew we were in trouble. I mean, I didn't know how bad the trouble was, because we broke for lunch. And Phil Patterson, the first assistant director, said, I'm not going to let you put him back on a horse. I mean, the man's in real trouble. And I said, well, no. We better talk to Jean. And Jean said, listen, I've been here all week. I've been able to do nothing. I don't think I'll be able to get through the weekend unless I'm able to do a scene. I've spent 7-8 months learning English to do this, and I'm going to do it. And then the producers had said, yo, he must go back on his horse. I then talked to Johnny Depp and said, what do you think, Johnny? And Johnny said, well, if he really wants to do it, I mean, you can't say no. And I said, he's an adult. So we put him back on the horse. And all we did, he was on the horse for about 45 minutes, just walking. And at the end of it, it took two people to lift him off the horse. And he was in bed, and he was on the plane the next day to Paris. It's that thing with actors, and that's why I love them, but they can almost kill themselves in trying to do their work. And Jean almost did that.
Well, Rochefort left after that day's shooting, and he promised to return in 2 days. He was seeing doctors in Paris, but 2 days became four, and then 10, and then I guess maybe never. what was going on while you waited in limbo to find out your star's prognosis? Were producers coming to you saying, why can't we recast? Find a different Quixote. Bruce Willis.
there was all of that going on. The insurance company in particular said, recast. And I said, well, we spent almost a year trying to get to this point. How do you just suddenly recast? Because there aren't many people out there that fill the bill. And I said, we've also got very complicated schedule problems. To reschedule is going to be very difficult and costly. And because we were, you know, an independent production, there was no fat in the budget. And I said, I don't know how we can do all of that. Johnny felt very strongly, as indeed did a lot of the cast and the crew, that let's wait for Jean. Maybe it'll only be a month. Maybe it'll be two months. We'll all go away. We won't charge any money for waiting. And when he's well, we'll come back and continue the film. And I was on that side. That's what I wanted to do. But we were given a deadline to come up with an answer, either recast or reschedule or whatever, or they'd pull the plug. And I just felt we couldn't in the time put it together in a new form. And so they pulled the plug.
At some point in the documentary, you're on the phone and you're explaining to someone that you just lost all sense of what the film was, that you had the whole film in your head. Mm. You carry these images around in your head, this vision of it all for a decade, and it's just dribbled out of you.
Well, I think it's, you know, it becomes such a, I don't know, maybe it's a way of surviving. Maybe my system just shut down and sort of closed the door on it. Maybe that's what it was, because having spent, you're torn, because on one hand, you spend so long at it, you're tired of it, you hate it, and you're worn out with it. On another hand, you know, you just want to get it up on the screen. And so your system is doing bizarre things. And I think physically I was so exhausted, and then you had the emotional exhaustion on top. It was kind of like, on one level, there was a relief. Ah, the nightmare is over. And go back to some other kind of life, and you think you've got over it, and then it would hit you like a month later. What a complete and utter waste of, you know, years of your life this has been, and it comes and goes. It's why I am still going to make the film, because the only way I can deal with these problems is to convince myself that yes, we will do it, and we'll do it in a year or two.
What occurs to you when you watch the documentary?
What occurs to me that I should never watch it again is what occurs to me.
Did you watch it?
Yes, I've watched it several times and I can't stand it. It leaves me depressed for a couple of weeks, and I'm trying to get my life back.
Terry Gilliam, it was such a pleasure talking to you today. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Director Terry Gilliam. When we spoke, he was in negotiations with the insurance company to get back the rights to his script, The Man Who Killed Don Quixote. The documentary about the making of the film, Lost in La Mancha, is now out on DVD.